Hi friends, Kate here. In this episode, we are discussing the topic of pregnancy loss. So we wanted to let you know in case this was a triggering topic for you. If it is, you are welcome to just skip this one and we'll catch you next week. Okay, on to the episode.
Welcome to Moms in the Wild with Kate
and Kara,
where we laugh at our wild moments to make you feel better about yours.
Welcome back to Moms in the Wild. We have part two of Emily's story this week. So we are picking right back up when Emily found out she was pregnant again following her loss. So have a listen, follow Emily's journey into motherhood and with her new sweet baby James, who is still just a tiny newborn. I have no idea how she made the time to do this podcast with us, but we are so grateful for her. And we hope that you like all the things that we have to talk about. Thank you again for listening. Thanks for hanging in there with us and enjoy. On to the episode.
That's such a quick turnaround too. Like you said, like I totally get it too. Like, I think when you have a loss for some people, it like just amplifies that need in me. Like I talked about before, like there's a, like, I can only describe it as like a fire. There's like a fire in my like physical body that like, I don't like want it. I like need it. Crave it. I desire it. So like, I think that quick turnaround, like, is so normal for a lot of people to be like, okay, like, it's just like even more so now, like tenfold.
I think too. And like we said on your episode as well, one thing we talked about, and like you said, Emily, you knew the statistics, but then it happening to you, it, you know, I also think like there's this, you truly, once both of you had that experience, you deeply, deeply understand how fragile things can be. And you know, like you said, logically, you knew this could happen. But then when it actually happens, I think that also, again, it just makes it so like, no, things don't always go as planned. Like, we need to do this now. Things are very fragile. We don't know what could happen. Like, and a control thing too, like, we can do it, we can do it, we can do it, we can do it, kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's actually interesting. And I almost surprised myself. John was the one of like the two of us who was very much like, are we sure we're ready? Like, I don't know what I would do if this happened again, which given like he's not super into talking about emotions like I am, right? And so for him to like voice that and be like, I don't know if I'm ready for this to happen again, I'm almost surprised that it was him and not me. But Kate, to your point, I think it goes back to just that like very visceral, like, this is a need that I have in my life. And especially given that we want to have like multiple children. And I, at the time, I guess, was like 31, you know, going through all of this. I'm like, we don't have time to around for a year and go through all the like mental work that we need to like fully be over this. And that's, you know, that's how I was looking at it.
I think like biologically too, like you, those first trimester like hormones that you are just like, your body is just working overdrive in that first trimester to like create and sustain this life from scratch. And I feel like when you have a loss, you go from having all of that in your body to like the next day, it's none of it. And so you really have like a like postpartum period. Mm-hmm. At least I felt like I did, where it was like, I was like extra emotional and like, I was hard to like regulate. And like, because a lot of that is like biological, mm-hmm. where like we have all of these like juicy, like glorious hormones, and then like, they're just taken from you. And so like that probably too, in that time, I don't know if your body, I maybe mine too, like went into this like trauma response of like, your brain was like, nope, not thinking about it, like gonna protect us from this, like we're not going there, I have stuff I want to do, and like that's what I'm gonna do. So I think that's like an interesting part of it.
Yeah,
you know, is like that biological like part where your body and your brain are literally like, nope, don't worry about it, like, you know, like, we'll deal with it later. Mm-hmm. You know, like, this is something we're gonna do.
Yeah
No, I agree. And it's interesting because I'm also very lucky that like I had already been working with a therapist for about like 10 years since this happened. Right. Yeah. So I acknowledge that I had a lot more support than a lot of people do when they go through this. But to your point, I was very much like, I did not really want to talk about it for a while. Right. And I think that I almost started dealing with it more once I got pregnant with James.
Yeah.
Because I was having to deal with it in acknowledging how different my response was to being pregnant after having that loss.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what I said about like it being a little bit different when you lose your first pregnancy. I'm never going to have a like blissfully ignorant, like everything is going so great pregnancy. Like that's just not a thing I'm going to have in my life. And so I think not only was I grieving what had happened, I was also grieving that my pregnancy with James was so different.
Yeah.
You know, my first pregnancy was only 10 weeks, but I was very much like, you know, I would say goodnight to the baby every night. Like we would go to the grocery store and I would like talk to the baby in my belly about like things we were buying. I did not do that with James until very, very late. And I think I'm still dealing with like, I feel some regret about that. Now that he's here and you know, I see how wonderful he is, like part of me feels sad that I didn't spend more time like talking to him, or not that I wasn't bonded to him when I was pregnant, because there's no way to like avoid that, right? Like they're a part of you. I certainly felt all of that love and emotion, but I think I didn't put as much excitement into that pregnancy maybe as I wish I would have. But I don't know if I could do that with another future pregnancy either. You know, it's a hard space to be in.
I think like I want to validate you in that. Like I think that is normal. And I truly think that like a lot of our minds like do just try to protect us. And you have to go and do those things again. You had to go back and do a 7-week appointment. You had to go back and do a 10-week appointment. Like
with the same doctor.
Yeah.
When I knew I had the same doctor, I was like, oh, this poor woman, she is on my shit list and she doesn't even know it. Yeah. She did nothing to deserve it, but I hate her. Like
think about like all that anticipation that you probably like, even if you can't acknowledge it, like in your mind, your body remembers that. Like our body remembers like our trauma that mm-hmm. we've been through. And, you know, like it probably wasn't until you were in that appointment, they were like, oh shit, you know, like this is really hard. And like, I think it's completely normal to not have felt that excitement. And, you know, when hopefully I get pregnant again, I think I'm going to be the same way of like, I'm so happy, but like, I'm going to be really guarded until like, I don't know, I'm holding the baby in my arms. Like, it's not, you're right. It's not going to be the same when I was pregnant with Bubba, where I was just like, look at me, I have a positive pregnancy test. Now I'm having a baby, you know, like, and I did the same thing. I would talk to the baby all the time. And so like, that's a hard thing. And nobody talks about that part of it where you're like, yes, it was 10 weeks, but like 10 weeks is a long time.
Think of anything that's happened to you for 10 weeks or like that you've done for 10 weeks. You know what I mean? Like 10 weeks is a long, long, long time.
Especially every day. And like when I was pregnant, I'm not sure if this is the same for you, but like I was all consumed with the fact that I was pregnant. Like I was pregnant all the time. It wasn't like I'm pregnant and I'm like working out. I was like, oh, I'm pregnant. Oh, I'm pregnant. Oh, I'm like everything I did. I was like, oh, I'm eating this. So the baby's eating this. Like it was just like, you know, it totally takes you
consumes you,
right?
Well, and especially because we moved during that time, right? So I mentioned we were in like the tiny apartment that we cannot have a child in. Like the minute I found out we were pregnant, I think we were already planning on moving. So we like moved into a 2-bedroom apartment while I was pregnant. Like the second bedroom was going to be the nursery. Like, and even like viscerally, like going in that room after what had happened, like I had a really hard time with that. And there were just a lot of those little moments that kept happening. Cause obviously, you know, being pregnant with James during COVID, you know, I found out I was pregnant the second time in October. And then that like December was Omicron. So if you go from cool, like world's getting back to normal to like, wait a minute, no, it's not. And so like supply chain issues, I had to order our nursery furniture because it was back ordered. I had to order it in January. His due date was the end of June. And so placing that furniture order at 13 weeks pregnant, even though again, you're like at the time where you're supposed to be able to tell people and like do all this stuff, like it made me very nervous.
Yeah.
And so like just our situation, I feel like there was a little bit of, you know, John would always tell me that I was being paranoid and I would like shut him down at the time and say, no, I wasn't. But like, I do think I was. I think there was just so much stuff going on in the world that like compounded the, like what I perceived as like threats to my pregnancy more so than just having a miscarriage too. Yeah. So it was like this perfect storm of like things as an anxious person to like in general to make me more anxious.
Can I ask both of you, and you don't obviously don't have to answer it, but I'm curious. I know like when I haven't experienced a pregnancy loss or miscarriage, but when I was pregnant at the very beginning, I was very anxious and nervous. And sometimes like when we disclosed early on, other people's excitement that I thought like in my mind, I was like, I will feel so much joy at other people's excitement. It would make me a little bit more anxious and nervous. Cause I was like, well, now people know, what if something happens and I have to let everyone, did you guys ever feel that way? Like during, like as with Bubba or with, well, not with Bubba, I'm sorry, but with like telling, disclosing about pregnancies, were you guys like, oh no, but now people know. So now like, it's up to the ante of my anxieties because I know what could happen. Did that add to that?
For me, it did. And I think it's actually appropriate that like we're talking about this on this podcast because Kate, you and I were like basically in like very constant communication about trying and like what our experience was. And as soon as I found out I was pregnant with that second pregnancy, I was like, crap, like you knew, right? That like I was about to have to be testing and I did not feel ready to tell you that I was pregnant.
Right.
And it was for that exact reason. You know, obviously we told like very close family, but I was like, the more people I tell, the more people who are going to be excited and the more people I'm going to have to like tell if something goes wrong. And I also felt that a little bit during my first pregnancy too, but it was certainly amplified with the second one. And even, you know, we waited a little bit longer to do our like, you know, social media, like now everybody knows. And I remember hitting post and just like freaking out, you know, and I think I would have been like that too before the loss, but I think a lot of that stuff was made worse for me. Probably.
Yeah. I imagine it's just like amplified. Cause I felt like cause you go through that time where they're like, this is the safe point of 12 weeks. But then also you just hear stories of like things can happen at any point in time. And because I do tend to be on the anxious side, I just remember having that overwhelming feeling kind of throughout my pregnancy, which is like, especially when we were disclosing, like the more people that know, the more people I have to tell that something has happened. And how do I deal with having to disclose that to now, like not just my immediate family, now like all of my friend group and all of my coworkers and all that, and that like underlying anxiety of like,
yeah,
what a pessimistic way to look at your pregnancy, you know, like just being like, I'm nervous, I'm scared. Yeah.
I think for me, it was different actually. I think we didn't have the ectopic pregnancy. We didn't really have time to like tell anyone because it was already like, this is weird. Like something strange is happening. But I feel like something happened after that, like, I don't think I could have made it if people hadn't have known and were able to like provide support.
Yeah.
Like I don't know how that would have looked for me if like, just I had had this loss and like no one knew, you know, like I was just in a super deep dark place and I needed people to help pull me out. Like I could not pull myself out. That was just not a question. And I think with the miscarriage, I don't know, we told you guys, we told like our families and then we told you guys, and I don't think I regretted that either. I think my whole mindset, I know it's extremely personal for everyone. And for me, it was kind of like, I'm going to celebrate and, or hopefully not, but grieve this baby regardless of what, like how long I have it. And so having other people be able to, I think it kind of felt a little bit like protective for
me. Or like building a support system or like either way, no matter which way this goes, I'm going to need to have a support system. So like start to build that. I totally, I get that.
Yeah.
I get
that. And like, also I had like posted something about having an ectopic pregnancy, like on social media. And for me, that was kind of like my way of being like, hey, this has happened to me. Don't say fucked up shit about pregnancy to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it was kind of like, and that's kind of like, that's kind of been a catalyst for me of like why I have been so vocal about what I've been through. It's a lot of it's like just protective for me.
Yeah.
Of like, I'm not the person like you want to complain about your pregnancy to, like, just don't do it. You know, like, cause I'm going to be like, I would give anything to be in that situation to like, fuck you know, like, or like,
don't say weird things about like a miscarriage or a pregnancy loss or like people just say insensitive stuff. I think regularly, not even thinking, but, and also like not, you don't know who you're talking to, you know, meaning like you don't know people's experiences unless you are someone that's open and honest and kind of like upfront about it, you know, then I do agree with that as like protective mechanism, which is like, remember, hi, don't say that shit to me. Or be prepared for a slap to the face after.
But I think that's why it's so important to talk about this and have so many people with these various varied situations because it's 1 in 4, right? Like that's a number. That's insane. If you like look at a room of people and you see 1 in 4, that's a shitload of people.
Yeah.
But our experiences are all so different. Mm-hmm. And that is what we need to, that's what we need to talk about. Those are the things we need to say, because like, look at like Emily and I, we went through the same thing. Like we both lost pregnancies, but like, look at the way that she would like to talk about it and like be, have people talk to her about it and share about it. And like, it's all so different. And we all need to like, that's what we just need to hear more stories about it, I think.
Yeah.
And I know that it's hard. I know that it's difficult. And I commend you, Emily, for coming on here and like telling your story, because I think you're super brave to do that. I think way more people who have been through it, like if they're comfortable, should. But it's for that. Like, I want to know how to better support somebody, because like I said, like if I had like done to Emily what I wanted to be done to me, like that wouldn't have been helpful for her.
Yeah, you know,
like absolutely. To help support her.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with everything, but like, especially with this, where it's just such a personal loss, especially for goes through it.
And I do feel like there's a certain amount of, I do still think it's a taboo topic.
Yeah.
Like, I do think people don't know how to approach it. Individuals that haven't had, like myself, I haven't had a pregnancy loss. And so it's been helpful to like have individuals like yourselves, like, you know, talk about what feels supportive and what doesn't feel supportive. And it's so individualized. So you don't know how to help someone, I think, a lot of the time until they tell you how to help them or what you can do for them. But I do still think it's such a taboo topic where other, also individuals that have experienced it don't talk about it or don't feel comfortable talking about it or think it's gonna, I don't know, not be well received or invasive questions are gonna get asked.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And I think it's interesting because, and one of the reasons that I want to talk about it, and I usually talk like, Kate, when I had the miscarriage, like, you didn't know I was pregnant, but you were one of the first people I told that the miscarriage happened, right? Because I knew you had been through it. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a big difference when it comes to pregnancy loss, that being supported by someone who has lost a loved one is not the same as a loss of a pregnancy. And so I don't think people know what to say if they haven't been through it. And saying, oh, you know, I had XYZ loss, I know what you're going through. Like, no, you don't. And so I think I didn't want that level of support from people who hadn't gone through it. And obviously, you know, my family was open to not knowing what it was or not knowing how to help, but I wanted to reach out to people. And this is why I think it's important to talk about it. Like, I want people in my life who go through this to know that I've been through this so that they can reach out to me for help, because I do know what it's like. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting in that way too.
Yeah. Because you're right. Like, it is one of those things that you truly don't know what to say or how to react unless you've been through it. And even so, like, I've been through it twice and I still like tread very carefully with when someone will reach out and say like, hey, this happened. And it's like, because like I said, like, you don't know if like how I would want to be responded to is how you want to.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of that is just for people listening who don't know. I think a lot of my first like opening strategy is like, just like, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
And like, once you get that first initial, like, I'm kind of numb, then great. You can go on with like, it's a completely normal to feel numb, or like, I'm really fucking sad. It's like anything. Here's the thing about this is like, any emotion you feel after a lot of pregnancy loss is normal.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, you can be, I was everything. I was numb. I was sad. I was pissed. I was like, fuck everything. I don't want to be here anymore. I was everything, you know.
Yeah.
I was depressed. It's so all encompassing, as much as pregnancy is, when you go through that loss of like, oh, okay. And you're right. Like, to surround yourself or to have a lifeline to be like, hey, I mean, there were a couple of times you texted me, were like, is this normal? This thought that I'm having? And it's like, yeah, you just need someone to be able to tell you it is, because everything is, you know, and just having that like relatability with, I think there's an art to it though. I think there's an art to being able to relate, but not being able to take over.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You
know? Like not working through your own trauma through someone else. Like I completely agree with what you just said, Emily, too. I think that like, there's this, people, because they don't know what to say, they just end up throwing like well-meaning platitudes at you. And it's like, this is not helpful. Like, this isn't helpful at all. I would much rather just look at someone and be like, I will do whatever you need me to do.
Yeah.
Like, if you want me to get you dinner, because that is what I can do that is most helpful, you know, instead of just saying things that end up being like empty and meaningless just to fill air. And I do think that's like a nervous tick, or I don't know, maybe genuinely people think they're being helpful when they say like, I don't know, sorry for your loss, or just whatever the thing is that they're saying that is like, that's not helpful to me, right?
I think people think if they say nothing, it comes across as like callous, right? Like, you can't look like you don't care if someone discloses something like that to you.
Yeah.
But you also don't know what to say. I mean, I've been in that situation with like other things, right? You have to show that you care.
Yeah.
But what can you say that's helpful if you haven't experienced it?
Sometimes I say, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
I
literally be like, I have no idea what to say right now.
And yeah.
But still then usually whoever I've been talking to will, because I've said that to you before.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what to say or don't know how to help. And you've been able to be like, I just needed to say it.
Yeah.
Or like, I just needed to do this thing. And that's, I do find that super helpful that you're like, no, I just, it's a sounding board thing. Like, you don't, I'm not, my expectation is not that you say anything to me right now. So great. Just listen.
But yeah, I think you're right. I think sometimes it's just like the listening. I just want someone to listen. I literally like, and when I was going through it, I didn't have someone that I knew had gone through it that I could call. And all I wanted to do was call someone and just fucking scream.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wanted to just scream. Why is this happening to me? What have I done? I miss my baby. Like, all the things that you like, I just want to say it to a person and like have someone receive that. And like, that's, we've said this before, overreaching. Like, that's why this is important. Like, building a network of this thing that happens that is so common but is so severe in the way that it can affect your life. That's the weird thing about it. It's so common, but like, it's so all encompassing.
Yeah.
Forever. Like, you know, and that's what I would get pissed when people would like say is like, oh, but look, you have Bubba. And I'd be like, aren't you so lucky that you have this child? I'm like,
yes, but.
But like, I know what like a pregnancy leads to because of him. I know what I'm missing out now. I know what my heart has lost.
Yeah. And it's not even like, it's not even a but, it's an and. Like, yeah. I'm super joyful that I have a beautiful baby boy. And I also am deeply wounded that I had a pregnancy. Like they do not cancel each other out. Right. That is.
No, agreed. And I think that almost made me feel, I won't say uncomfortable. I don't know. Guilty, maybe. I don't know. About the way that I thought about my pregnancy with James, right? Because I was very much, and I would verbalize, and again, very much like you two, we did not find out the sex of our baby. So I'd say he, but did not know that at the time. You know, I was pregnant thinking, well, he's not the other baby.
Yeah.
And not in a bad way. Not in a, I'm not grateful for this pregnancy. I am not, you know, I'm so excited to find out who he or she is going to be. I felt all of that. And I very much enjoyed my pregnancy. I loved being pregnant. Like it was great. But there was always that thing in the back of my mind that was like, I'm hopefully going to get to meet this baby. I'm never going to get to meet the other baby.
Yeah, I know.
And, you know, my mom would always tell me this because one of her very close friends had a miscarriage when they were all having their kids. And she would tell me while I was pregnant, you know, my friend said that, you know, yes, that miscarriage was devastating, but if she didn't have that miscarriage, she wouldn't have Matthew, her last son. Like it wouldn't have been him. And she kept saying that to me. And I was like, yeah, you know, that's nice. That's nice. But like once James was born, like I very viscerally feel like I cannot imagine that baby not being in my life.
Yeah.
And so hopefully having that retrospect will also kind of help me with whatever pregnancies may or may not come and whatever may or may not happen to them in the future. And I'm grateful to have that perspective now that it can be a both and, right? Not an either or.
Yeah. And that's something that I've always said too, to like kind of not justify, but like help my heart and head is like, those babies just weren't our babies. And like, our baby is coming. I have full belief. And like, I know that like my baby that I'm supposed to have babies, whatever, are going to come to me. Mm-hmm. And it's for that. It's like, I feel like that's kind of my lifeline. I don't know, man. It's just very honest. It's just such a shitty thing to go through. And it's so many, like so faceted in so many layers. And I don't know, you spoke a little bit, unless there's anything, Emily, you want to say about your story.
No, that's it. I mean, that's where we are now. James made it. We're here.
You mentioned that your doctors gave you a list of resources. I was wondering if there was anything during that time that helped you, maybe that like could be accessible for other people, or like any like tips or like things during that time that you felt were helpful.
Yeah. And I will say, like, I didn't really use any of the resources because I was seeing a therapist, right? Yeah. And so I think I didn't look into support as much as I could have beyond like what we talked about, right? Like you were a huge part of my support system because I knew you had gone through this. I do think though that given that people are talking about this more, I have other people who I guess I would call acquaintances that I was like close with in high school, but I'm still like friends with on Facebook. People are posting more, right, about their experiences. Mm-hmm. And even though like I didn't need support, I will still sometimes like reach out to those people and say, hey, I know I don't like post about this all the time, but I had XYZ experience. If things ever bubble up for you and you need someone to talk to, I'm here. And I think that that goes the other way too, right? Like if you go through a loss and you see somebody who you may not have a connection with anymore, but the post about it and you need somebody to talk to, like you said, you didn't have anybody yet in your life who had gone through that. I don't think the distance that you have from somebody should stop you from reaching out to that person if you feel like you need help.
Yeah.
And I know that's not like a specific resource or anything, but I feel like people who have gone through this, whether or not they enjoy talking about it, like want to help. Mm-hmm. At least that's what I found. And so I think I would just say like, don't hesitate, right? Like I'm very much the, I can get through this on my own, like type of person, like pull myself up by my bootstraps and just like hustle through it. And I could not, there's no way I could have done that for this. And so that's my biggest tip is like, even if you think you can get through it on your own, you can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that even if you think it's, you can't come back from it. Right. So even though, you know, James is here and it's amazing and he's the best, like we decorated our tree and that angel baby ornament came out and all those feelings came rushing back. Right. And I think saving space for that and talking to people about it is very important too.
That's the same thing happened for me with the Christmas tree too. That's so funny. It's like, it does just, it, you're right. Like, you forever are a changed person mm-hmm. after. And like, you're right. There's no going back. Like, you don't go back to like the naive, like, everything's great. I'm never going to have to think about this again. Like, it is truly like, I'm what, 2 years out from, or a year and a half since my last loss. And it's like, still, I unpacked the tree and put those ornaments up. And I was like devastated for the whole day. Cause it's just like,
yeah.
And it's also that thing of like, I put the stuff away, like praying, hoping, wishing that like there was going to be a baby here next time I brought it out. And there's stuff like that, you know, where it's just like, it just constantly like, and then the thoughts of like, oh, well, I'd have Bubba and like a woman and like da da da. And like, it's just that, like, for me, I will say, and this is something I would say to anyone listening, it's like, with time, it does get better. Mm-hmm. And like, I truly did not think that that was going to happen in mm-hmm. my heart. When I was going through it, I was like, I will never not feel this weight. And I will say, like, I still have the weight, but it's much, much less than it was in the beginning. And so I know it does not ever, it will never go away, but like with time, it's eased. The pain. Weight, the pain, drowning, the waves have gotten so much smaller. But they're still there, you know?
And I think too, it would be, and I know everyone's experience is different, so I don't actually want to say that, but I think for some individuals, like, you grieve for the rest of your lives, right? Mm-hmm. Like, grief isn't something that you just like put down and you're like, done with that thing now, like clean it up, you know? So like you said, I think that the realistic reality of grief is that it is not all consuming all of the time anymore. And that's like, again, that's like the journey, or both of the journey that you're experiencing. It's not like about like healing or like, I don't know, like this thing that you're overcoming. It's like, how are you able to manage your day to day and still be grieving? And that doesn't just disappear, right? You can't just like put that down and be like, that's gone now. Right.
Yeah.
That's really scary. But I do think it's important to say that, like you just said, you know, that it gets less heavy.
Yeah.
Like, it just gets less heavy. It doesn't mean that it's gone completely, but it does become less all consuming mm-hmm. for long durations of time.
And it shifts into a certain like remembrance, right? It's more of a memorial, sounds weird, because it's not like I have like this like shrine to the baby in our house, but it becomes more of a memorial of doing the things in remembrance versus, and even though that's tinged with sadness, the remembrance is more than the sadness piece. So like, for example, we've always donated to St. Jude's, but my parents did it and we did it like right after the miscarriage, like almost in honor of the baby. Right. And so every time we donate to St. Jude's, we do that in the baby's memory. And the first time we did it, it was very much out of sadness, but now it's almost a thing that we do in like a fond remembrance of the baby. And so even the way that those activities have changed is progress. Too.
Your parents were very sweet. They did that for our babies too. It was like the best like little surprise. We got a little note and it said in honor, and it was I will cry if I keep talking about it, so I won't. But it was so sweet. It's the acknowledgement and the remembrance when others share that with you is such a big, it's so huge. Yeah.
Cause that's so huge. It is, because it allows for that like component of mourning, right? Yeah. Like the grief is like your own personal experiences, like internally of like what's happening and the way that you're feeling, but being able to like be with, see that externalized, like see that someone else is grieving or mourning rather with you. I don't know. I think that's super important to have someone else acknowledge like, this is shitty. It's shitty. And here's this thing. Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. I know, we all like took a collective, like, no, it's heavy, but it, like I said, like, I'm grateful that the tide is turning on conversations where like, this is getting more prevalent.
People
are talking about it, because like you said, like, even if it's one person from like high school who like reaches out and it's like, I've been through it too. Like, if you need me, I'm here. Like, just having that, even if you never take them up on it, like that lifeboat, that lifeline is like, okay. Like that, like,
you're not alone.
Yeah. It's that breath that you need.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think, Emily, you kind of like mentioned that too, just like reaching out. I think that's so important. You just like open the door. You know what I mean? Even what's the worst case scenario? They never take you up on it. Like, who gives a shit? You know what I mean? Like, but opening that door so that they know that they can, I think is so important and so big. And just saying that, like, just leaving it at that, like, I've had this experience and I want you to know I am here for whatever you need. And just that you have opened that door of support for them if they need it. Yeah. I think that's great.
And I think that's so important too, rather than just like using a third party resource where you like don't have any connection to the people, because I think it just lends itself to the conversation being more real and meaningful, right? Like, I can't imagine starting with like a therapist out of nowhere with this. Like, it helped that I had been seeing her for 10 years. Now, of course, I would encourage anybody to start with a therapist. If like, this is the traumatic event that gets you to therapy, like 100% do it. But there is that level of personal connection that just helps so much when talking about stuff like this.
Yeah. So Emily, tell us a little bit about what life is like now, because like I said, it feels like it was an eternity ago for me.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we've been talking about stuff that people should talk about more. And I think those first 8 weeks should be something people talk about more. Right. I feel like everybody's very open about like body changes during pregnancy and like now starting to talk about miscarriage and making sure that you're prepped for stuff that might happen when you actually give birth to a tiny human. But I would say the first 8 weeks, especially for me, were pretty rough, especially when it came to hormonal changes, because I dealt with pregnancy hormones like a little bit, but as an emotional person, it was not as bad as I was prepared for. I was not just like randomly weeping. Like, I would get maybe a little bit more irritated than usual, but certainly no like pregnancy rage, like anything like that. And so how I felt after was like came completely out of nowhere and was not something I was prepared for. And a lot of that dealt with also how little people talk about feeding challenges. And I'm sure you guys are going to do a whole episode on that. But long story short, James was born with a tongue tie, but he like tricked everybody. So everybody thought that he had this like great latch and he looked like he was eating. And then his first appointment, we found out he was not and had lost a bunch of weight. And so, you know, my like milk had trouble coming in. We had to start supplementing with formula. He had to have his tongue tie clipped, which like seeing your husband just like hold this 3-week old baby while a doctor is just going to like stick a little thing in there and clip it. And like the scream that he let out, like was just, it was so sad, but he was like a champ. He handled it really well. And I was like dead set on trying to nurse him to the point where every time I tried to feed him, I was like crying. And it happened when we, like before we got his tongue tie clipped, like I knew it could take a little bit of time after. And like, I was like, no, he deserves this chance for us to like try to have this. And I was like, we need to try. And it got to the point where John and my mom were both like, this is not sustainable. Like, you need to decide what you want to do. Cause I always felt better when I like took a break and was like just pumping, but I like, man, I could not let go. And I think it had to do with like the whole miscarriage thing. I was like, right, like this pregnancy made it, like now I deserve the experience that I wanted for feeding. Right. And so I let it go probably longer than it should have. And I don't think people set the expectation for how hard actually nursing is going to be. Nope. And so that took me completely by surprise. And so most of that like first 8 weeks was just like me trying to figure that out. At one point, you know, we did the thing where I would try to get him to latch. And then as soon as we were kind of done with that, like John would take over with a bottle while I pumped. And it was just like, he was getting up every 2 hours. I was getting up every 2 hours. We were both just like zombies. That's definitely the part that I've like mentally blocked out of my mind.
Yeah.
But I do feel like that's the next big topic when it comes to motherhood and all of this stuff that people need to like start talking about. Because I had no idea. And it's the same thing. Once like people were like, how's it going? And I would like open up a little bit about it. People were coming out of the woodwork being like, oh, my baby had a tongue. Like, I didn't even know that was a thing.
Yeah.
All of these people are telling me I went through that too. I'm like, well, that would have been nice to know, you know, beforehand. Yeah. So people have these experiences that they're not sharing. And I think that would have maybe like helped me. I certainly don't think I felt any of that like pressure of like, you must feed your child a certain way. Like, it was all internal. It wasn't external. So that was like a lot.
A lot of it is, right? Like the roller coaster of trying to breastfeed your child is like so real. Where you said, like, I remember you were texting me during that time, Emily, and you were like, one day it was like, I'm doing it, we're figuring it out. And the next you're like, I'm quitting, I hate this. And then it was literally like a couple every hour she'd be like, I'm done, I'm going, I'm done, I'm going. I'm like, but like feed is so different. And if it's not working with your body, like it wasn't for mine, like it's excruciating. Mm-hmm. Those feedings are like, there's no joy. There's none of that like, oh, look at me, I'm Mother Nature in a person. Yeah. And I'm like doing it. You know, it's just like, this sucks and my baby hates it. You know?
Yeah, that's my biggest thing. I could not commiserate with a person more than with everything that you just said, because it was, we had bought formula, like we were ready. I was like, whatever the baby needs, the baby's going to do. I had a desire to, you know, nurse and breastfeed before the birth. For some reason, after, I was fixated. I know I talk about this in another episode that hasn't aired yet, but like fixated on the breastfeeding thing. And it does, it just varies so, so greatly. And something that I wish really, really deeply that people hadn't only made breastfeeding sound like a bonding experience and wonderful, because it was the one thing. And like during that first like 6 weeks that like I had never felt more distant from my baby than when I was trying to get her to latch or breastfeed her. Like that was not a bonding time at all in any way, shape or form. I didn't look down at her lovingly. She didn't look at me lovingly. She was basically fist fighting me the entire time, like crying. I was crying. I'm sure Chris was locking himself away somewhere crying. Everyone was crying. Like three people were trying to like, get her on my boob at once. So the picture in my head was what everyone had told me, which was like, it's so magical. There's nothing that will make you feel more bonded. Like you feel like such a unit. And I did not, like none of those feelings resonated with me, which then made me feel like I was doing something wrong, which wasn't. It's just like really shitty and hard to do it. Like,
and that's the exact same thing I wanted. Right. And I feel like I wanted it so much too, because like I expressed the like slight regret I have over not like actively trying to bond more during my pregnancy. So I think from like my perspective, I was like, this is my moment. Like, this is going to be the special bonding time that we have. It's going to be so great. But like, people should talk about contact naps more. Like, that's how you bond with your baby, right? Yeah. Like, when they're like not trying to do anything and they're just asleep on you and like are so cute and you can just kind of like also lay on the couch and have some time for like an hour, like however long it's going to take, like that's the bonding time. Like, I wish I had realized that earlier.
Point. That's such a good thing to sell someone who's about to enter motherhood, of like, if breastfeeding doesn't work out for you, you don't lose. There are still going to be tons and tons of magical times that you get with this baby.
Yeah.
Because, like, you're right. Like those times where you're just so exhausted and like you're both like topless and they're just like laying on your chest. It's like, oh yeah, so good. You feel like their little belly rise and fall and they make the noises and you can hear them. Like, you can get that experience not breastfeeding.
Or like our baby loves to like shower with us, you know what I mean? And so like we had like most of that like really heavy bonding, I felt like, aside from the contact naps, it was like we would like shower together and she was just like, it was like the right amount of stimulation and you're super comfortable, there's water. And again, like that's what I felt. It never was when she was trying. For the first 6 weeks, breastfeeding was like the bane of my existence. It wasn't, I never, not once in those 6 weeks was like, like I never, ever had that experience. And you're doing it every two hours. You know what I mean? So that's a lot of time to be like, I hate this the whole time.
Yeah. And once I decided to exclusively pump, I went through the same thing, right? Because especially my husband was very lucky. He was home for 3 weeks up front. And then when he's actually on paternity leave right now, he gets 12 weeks of paternity leave, which is incredible. But I don't think I was prepared for exclusively pumping when he went back to work. So he's like hybrid. He goes into the office like 2 to 3 days a week. And the days that he would go into the office, I would be like, I would feed James. I would like maybe lay him down to like start to play. And then maybe like 3 minutes, 4 minutes into pumping, he'd be like, nah, I'm over this. I'm going to cry. And then I'm like, what am I supposed to do? Like, I'm like putting Encanto on and trying to sing to him. And he did not like that. And I'm like, all right, now what can I try? Well, I'm attached to this machine. Like, and those are the times too, I texted you the same things. So I was like, I'm going to stop pumping. No, I'm going to keep pumping. I'm going to stop pumping. I'm still pumping. And if you had told me like however many months ago that I was still going to be, I would have been like, no, that's not a thing that I'm still going to be doing when he's 5 months old.
Yeah.
So it's a journey, man. And nobody talks about it, but that's the other good lesson too, right? Is I feel like especially with newborns, everything is like a potentially like 2 week phase.
Yeah.
At least what I found. And so even now, like I acknowledge that we've been very lucky with him. John's parents have now 11 grandchildren. He's the 11th. And the fact that they say like, he's the happiest and like best baby they've ever seen, like they know their shit, right? And they're saying that. I'm like, all right, we have like somewhat hit the jackpot and this will probably never happen to us again. But when like, and that almost makes it harder, right? When he goes through like an I'm not going to nap right now phase And I'm just standing in there looking at him saying, why won't you go to sleep? I need to get stuff done. You know, the biggest reminder is like, all right, I'll give it a week and then maybe he'll go back to normal. And that's what's happened so far. So it's so much the minute you think you got it figured out, something else happens.
Yeah. Which is like a blessing and a curse. Cause like you said, if it's something crappy that's happening, you're like, well, we're probably going to be out of this phase in a number of days. But then when something changes that was like really easy or going really well, you're like, shit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's constantly changing. Yeah.
Well, we took a short little break. So can you just talk a little bit about how you said parenting now after your loss, how you like, you kind of go in and check on him, that kind of
thing? Oh yeah. 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 I think now I've already admitted I'm like generally an anxious person. And so some of this I may have done anyway with a newborn. So like, I don't know, but I mean, I still check to make sure he's breathing at 3 a.m. after I pump. Right. Like, and I don't do it. And then, oh my gosh, I'm afraid I'm going to go in there and like something statistically improbable will have happened. But like, I do think there's part of me that doesn't take for granted that some of the like less statistically likely things that could happen, right? Like the first time he decided that he was going to sleep on his stomach after he could roll over, I was in there like every 5 minutes being like, he's going to smoosh his face into something, even though there's nothing in that crib, like something's going to happen. Right. And I don't think I would have felt that way had I not had that loss first. So I do think I wouldn't call myself a helicopter parent. And I very much don't want to be like that. Like when I walk away and he's like, starts crying, I'm like, you're fine. I'm like right here. You can see me. I don't need to run over and like attend to whatever you're feeling right now. And he's fine. So I'm not like crazy about it, but I do think I have more of a sensitivity to making sure he's okay than I otherwise may have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was telling you too, that since our losses, like I feel like my parenting has gotten more lax. Like I'm just so fucking grateful that he exists and he's here, that like, I'm like, popsicle for breakfast, like, go for it, dude. Like, I'm just glad you're in the room, you know, like,
so and, happy to have you. Yeah.
That's something like David is like, you gotta like buckle up. Cause you know, he doesn't like respect you a ton. And I'm like, no, cause I'm just so, I look at him and I'm like, I'm just so glad you're here. Like,
yeah,
my child,
you know, I'm like, that kid gets whatever he wants. Cause I'm just a mush. Like I look at him and cry still. I'm like, oh,
I do that. Yes. All the time. I will look at him and just cry. And John is like, why are you crying? And I'm like, he's so cute. Like,
have you seen him?
He's here.
Oh, and it's, I mean, it's been awful. John makes fun of me to no end, like right after his first Halloween, and right, he was like 4 months at Halloween. So like, I bought a costume just to take pictures. Like I was crying because he was never going to have another first Halloween or like Thanksgiving. I was like, we're with family. It's his first Thanksgiving. Like I'm going to be a wreck at Christmas. Like that's probably also maybe, oh, I think I would have done that either way, but maybe. I'll tell myself that I'm a little more emotional about all this first because of what happened.
You're like, I'll use that. Yeah. I may have also just been this.
We much. Love a good justification.
Yeah. Uh-huh. That's what I do all the time.
I do. I know. Same. I'm like, you want more sugar? Nah, whatever. You live, you exist.
Yeah. You're here. Have that sugar. I love it.
Yeah.
A lot of weeks of his life where I was just like a sad sack. So I got some making up to do.
He doesn't know.
No, he doesn't.
But I get it. No, because I do the same shit where I like, I definitely internalize it more. Anytime I'm like, oh, I was in a bad mood. The baby knows.
Yeah.
And Chris has to be like, no, you know what? She doesn't. And I'm like, oh yeah. Okay, fine.
I know. I do like the big little feelings thing where like, I apologize to him if all I yell at him or whatever. And I'm like, hey, you know, mommy's sorry for yelling. He's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I know. Okay. I'm trying.
I will be interested to see how that plays out, because I also follow them on Instagram, and I'll like float, like especially the stuff that I see on there that is like completely the opposite of how I think John will parent. I'm like starting to tee it up, right? Like James can like only roll over. Like we have so much time until we actually have to speak to him in words that he'll understand. But I'm like starting to tee up, like, hey, maybe we should think about this like this. And he just like stares at me and he's like, what? And so if James is gonna, the minute James does the same thing where he's like, why are you doing that? John will be like, we don't need to do this anymore.
Why are you saying darn?
Yeah, right.
And then no matter what the work you do, they just turn into little jerks.
They're all driven based on like need in themselves. So yeah.
You
know what I mean? And we have like egos, but so we're like looking at them like, be a person. And they're like, I can't.
Toddlers are the definition of the audacity. I just have to tell you.
Yeah.
Like we're at the park and I'm like, you know, Bubba. And he's like flat out ignoring me. And then he waits like 30 seconds. He looks at me and goes, Ma, you call me? I'm like, Yeah.
Yeah, like in his little, I told you, like 1940s, like Brooklyn, yeah, like guy call with a freaking hat, like passing out newspapers. Hey, you call me?
You talking to me? You talking to me?
Yeah, yeah, I called you. Smart aleck. Get your ass over.
I will say, though, in terms of like people with social media followings, we got the taking care of babies, newborn sleep class. And like,
yeah.
I don't know if it was her or if it was just like James, but like, it worked. I mean, like at 7 weeks old, he was sleeping an 8-hour stretch at night. Like we, yeah, it worked. I will plug that woman until the day I die.
That's incredible.
That is amazing.
We will pop her information as well as like St. Jude's, and we'll put like a little feeling, yeah, in there. Why, oh, yeah, not? You guys talked about them like 6 times.
Yeah. Yeah. Might as well.
We'll put all that in the episode description. Is there anything else you'd like to plug or say to kind of finish us off here, Emily?
No, I don't think so. Just thank you guys for having me. I think it's so important. And, you know, I think, you know, for anybody that's going through it, I mean, there is that light at the end of the tunnel. Like, mm-hmm. And I think I'm so much more grateful for James because of the experience I've had. And so that even though it's made it harder in a lot of ways, it's made it a lot more beautiful in a lot of ways. And from going from like planning a wedding during COVID and like all of this stuff happening and like having to be pregnant and parent in this like time in our lives, I still don't know if I would go back and change a lot of it. Mm-hmm. So looking back always, you know, I think part of it's rose colored glasses, but I think part of it's true that things truly are supposed to happen the way they are. And yeah, we're just really happy and learning the whole mom thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you again for sharing your story and getting vulnerable. And you know, like we said, it's hard to talk about, but it's important. And I'm just grateful to you for coming and doing it.
Yeah, thanks.
And it's fun to talk to a mom who's like in the thick of it.
Yeah, you're in it.
you are in the wild.
Yeah.
You're in the wild times, my
Awesome. So friends, if you enjoyed this podcast, if you enjoy us in general, if you want us to bring Emily back on, if you loved her, if you love talking about this and you want to share your story, we'd, yeah, love to hear from you. There are a couple ways you can do that. First, we're just going to shamelessly ask for reviews. If you are listening to this podcast and you like it, go ahead and leave us a review.
Just tell us.
Why not? It's like 30 seconds of your day.
It also just helps us know like that we're making stuff you want to listen to. That's, yeah, it's like the easiest way to be like, okay, continue forward.
Yeah.
So yeah, super helpful.
Yes. We also have merch now.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Yeah.
You got things for your body.
Things for your body. Things for your
hand.
Hand.
Like a cup.
Things for your head.
Things for your head. Things for your kids. We cover all bases.
So if you want to check that out, you can do that at momsinthewild.com/shop.
And on socials, we're at momsinthewild_pod. And you can find us on TikTok and Instagram.
Yeah. And you can call us and leave us a voicemail at 878-CALL-MOM.
878-CALL-MOM.
Call ma.
Call ma. Yeah. Go call your ma. Go call us too.
Thank you, Emily, again. And yes, we will see you guys next week.
Yeah. Stay safe out there, friends.
It's a jungle. Bye.
Love you. Bye.